This has severely, severely damaged the morale and the public's impression of our correctional officers.
The legislature confirms Governor Walker appointees, but not without some dissent. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a bill to claw back funding for future renewable energy projects.
It is a win-win for rural Alaska, for communities that are dependent upon revenue sharing.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Public Media is seeking donations for our 2016 Big Alaska Statewide TV Travel Auction to be held on May 19th and 20th. We're looking for trips, accommodations, activities, and adventures. Your generous donation will help us in our commitment to growth and excellence in programming on Alaska Public Media. There's more information online on our events page on our website at alaskapublic.org.
The legislature today narrowly approved former Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins to serve on the board responsible for developing the Alaska Gas Pipeline. And it also confirmed Dean Williams as the commissioner of the Department of Corrections. A joint session of both houses voted 31 to 27 to confirm Hopkins to the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. Governor Bill Walker appointed Hopkins in November after overhauling the board. Fairbanks Democratic Representative David Guttenberg says Hopkins' experience is what the AGDC board needs. Hopkins is Guttenberg's brother-in-law.
Luke's got a long history of getting things done or trying to get things done with the pipeline.
Eagle River Republican Representative Dan Sadler opposed Hopkins. He questions whether the AGDC board is following the right direction. He referred to former AGDC President Dan Fauske's ouster.
The personnel changes in both the staff and the board at AGDC give me cold comfort that the organization's effort is to achieve the model which I believe is in the best interest of the state.
The legislature voted by a wider margin to confirm Williams, 49-9. His appointment has been controversial. The Corrections Officers Union opposed Williams. Union officials say an administrative review co-written by Williams was unfair to officers. But North Pole Republican Senator John Coghill says Williams is the right man for making changes in the department.
This is a job that has needed to be done for a lot of years. So I'm going to support him.
Anchorage Democratic Senator Bill Willikowski says Williams didn't give the public an accurate view of officers' work.
This has severely, severely damaged the morale and the public's impression of our correctional officers. And the problem is, a number of things in that administrative review were seriously, seriously taken out of context.
The legislature confirmed dozens of other appointments. The only person rejected was Hope resident Guy Trimmingham to the Board of Game. One casualty of the state's budget crisis this year is investment in renewable energy. Since 2008, Alaska's Renewable Energy Fund has supported scores of projects around the state, most of them aimed at replacing expensive diesel fuel with everything from wind to hydro to biomass. So far, the state budget includes no money for the fund, but a bill passed by the Senate this week would try to replace some of that funding in years to come. APRN's Rachel Waldholz reports.
Sean Scaling with the Alaska Energy Authority says the fund has been crucial in getting projects around the state off the drawing board and onto the grid.
Well, I say what the fund has really done over the last few years, it has made projects happen.
From wind turbines in Unalakleet to hydropower in Chignik Lagoon to a biomass boiler in Thorne Bay, the fund has provided seed money or shouldered the full cost of projects across Alaska. The priority is to replace pricey diesel fuel, which can make lighting or heating a home in many parts of the state intolerably expensive.
So if you pay a lot for electricity or pay a lot for heating fuel, those are the projects that are most likely to rise in the criteria.
In the past, lawmakers have included the fund as part of the capital budget, along with infrastructure projects around the state. It started with an initial investment of about $100 million and received about $25 million a year since, dropping to less than $10 million last year. But so far, this year's capital budget is a ghost of its former self. just $80 million total. There's no money included for the renewable energy grants. That means no funding for the nearly 40 projects in the running this year, from Sitka to St. Paul. This week, the Senate passed a bill sponsored by Bethel's Lime and Hoffman, which might provide at least some money in the years ahead. The bill, SB 196, focuses primarily on shoring up the endowment for the Power Cost Equalization Program, which offers relief from sky-high electricity rates in rural Alaska. But in years when the fund earns more than the program requires, it would split the excess earnings between two other initiatives, community revenue sharing and rural power projects, including the Renewable Energy Fund. Testifying this week, Hoffman said it's a good use for the endowment.
So I think that it is a win-win for rural Alaska, for communities that are dependent upon revenue sharing, and for other rural energy programs.
If the fund matches its past performance, it could generate about $3 million a year for energy programs, starting in 2018. The bill still must pass the Alaska House. From the Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waltholtz in Anchorage.
Alaska Governor Bill Walker says he would veto the purchase of a legislative office building in Anchorage if that item remains in the state infrastructure budget. Walker says the purchase is not compatible with where the state is financially right now. The current Senate version of the capital budget includes $32.5 million for the building and land purchase of the Anchorage Legislative Information Office. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, retired EPA scientist Phil North pushes back against allegations by Pebble Mine proponents.
To characterize me as some conspirator, it doesn't match the facts. It's a misrepresentation of the way the process works.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Outstanding votes in Anchorage's municipal election have all been counted, and the results have upended two races. By just two votes, the residents in the Girdwood Valley service area have opted to tax property to pay for police protection once the state troopers leave this summer. Star Marcette nudged past K. Ellen Schuster to take seat B on the school board by 68 votes. The $49 million school bond was defeated. The University of Alaska is facing a $50 million budget cut due to a legislative committee vote yesterday. The conference committee voted 5-1 to adopt the House version of the university budget, which cuts $35 million more than the $15 million cut proposed by Governor Bill Walker. The budget controlled by the legislature would be $300 million, as opposed to Walker's proposed $335 million. Weather may have been a factor in last week's plane crash on Admiralty Island. The crash killed the pilot and two passengers and badly injured another person on board. The Sunrise Aviation flight began in Wrangell and was headed to Angoon, about 110 miles to the northwest. A preliminary National Transportation Safety Board report says pilot David Gala had changed course due to low clouds and reduced visibility. Sean Williams is a safety board investigator.
From what we've been told when he spoke with the director of operations at Sunrise, he did turn around because he could not get through Pybus Bay. So now we just want to verify everything and verify how the weather was at the time.
Pybus Bay is on the south end of Admiralty Island. In addition to the pilot, the crash killed Greg Schaaf and Thomas Sikowich of Wrangell. The injured passenger, Morgan Enright of Ketchikan, remains at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. Retired EPA scientist Phil North, the man the Pebble Partnership says was the mastermind behind an effort to block a giant mine in southwest Alaska, spent a full day answering questions from a congressional committee Thursday. APRN's Liz Ruskin caught up with him outside the U.S. Capitol.
Now that the staff of the House Science Committee is done questioning him, North says his involvement in the Pebble mine is over.
I hope it is. You know, it's hard to predict what will happen. I thought it was done when I retired.
Instead, Pebble officials compelled his return to the U.S. from the Asia Pacific, where he's on a grand tour with his family, to answer questions related to a lawsuit over the proposed Pebble mine. North sat for questions from Pebble attorneys in Washington, D.C. 2 weeks ago, and then received a congressional subpoena to answer more questions. North says the House committee is requiring confidentiality, so he was not free to disclose what was discussed in the closed session. Pebble claims North improperly colluded with anti-mine activists. Pebble CEO Tom Collier summed it up for KDLG this month.
Mr. North was part of a group at EPA that made up their minds that this project should be vetoed before any of the science that they alleged they did was done, and that they manipulated the process in such a way as to make that outcome become a reality.
Collier points to emails that he says show North helped mine opponents draft their petition to the EPA. Then, according to Pebble, North disappeared when questions and lawsuits arose. North, though, says he's just been traveling with his family, not dodging or absconding. He says they left a paper trail when they bought a car in Australia and registered it at an address where they lived for a time and where they continued to receive mail.
And that's a public record. They could have found it if they wanted to. So this idea that we were somehow trying to avoid being found is really, I mean, that's kind of silliness.
North says his wife was posting their location on Facebook. And you can still see their profiles on the likes of Aussie House Sitters and TrustedHouseSitters.com. Before he retired, North says he was just doing the job he was paid to do, protecting aquatic resources, in this case Bristol Bay, using the powers Congress granted in the Clean Water Act.
I was the staff person for that program. So I was the person who had to initially come up to evaluate the information, to collect information, evaluate it, and then say, how should we proceed?
North says the actual decision to use a lesser-known passage of the Clean Water Act against the mine before Pebble applied for a permit was made by higher-ups at EPA.
I initiated the idea. To characterize me as some conspirator, you know, it doesn't match the facts. It's a misrepresentation of the way the process works.
The House Science Committee plans another Pebble hearing on April 28, featuring EPA Regional Administrator Dennis McLaren. North doesn't expect to attend. He's no longer under any subpoena. He plans to join his wife and kids on the island of Bali and then decide which country to visit next. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Three tax proposals have been rolled into one bill being considered by a state House committee. A draft rewrite of Governor Bill Walker's motor fuels tax bill rolled out by the House Finance Committee also adds in proposed increases in mining and fisheries taxes. Walker has proposed increases for all three. Committee co-chair Steve Thompson says the three seemed to fit together. The committee also has been holding hearings on Walker's proposal to reinstitute a personal income tax in the waning days of this legislative session. Thompson says the income tax bill could get to the House floor, but couldn't say whether it would have the votes to pass. Leaders in the Senate have shown little interest so far in an income tax. The 640-acre Point McKenzie Correctional Farm outside of Wasilla provides food for the state's prisons and local food banks. Inmates raise pigs, cattle, and chickens and farm thousands of pounds of potatoes, tomatoes, and other produce each year. And as Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman learned, the farm does more than provide food and savings for the state. It helps people turn their lives around.
John McElwain walks me through his pig barn, past lounging sows with swollen teats and squealing piglets. Other little ones nap in the small wooden shed.
These ones are new. These are about 2 weeks old. She had 12. They're just kind of doing their thing in there. We build a little house for them to keep them warm, and they like that.
McElwain never envisioned himself as a pig farmer. He was working as an industrial painter, but he started using drugs and was arrested 3.5 years ago.
I hate to say it, but coming to prison was probably the one of the better things that has happened to me. You know, if I'm really honest about it, I needed to be taken away from myself.
When he was living in the pretrial facility, he went through drug abuse treatment and took anger management classes. A year later, he was finally sentenced to 10 years in prison. He was sent to Goose Creek Correctional Center. Because he was minimum security, not a sex offender or an arsonist, and pretty low risk, he was given the option to live and work at the correctional farm instead of the prison. He's one of 35 inmates there. McElwain says working on the farm is keeping him focused and on track.
Sitting over there across the road, twiddling your thumbs, you're more apt to get into all the negatives that are in prison, you know, and when you're busy working or busy doing what you're doing, you're less likely to fall into those pitfalls, you know.
McElwain says it feels different being on the farm than in pretrial. He and the other men are judged by their work rather than just as inmates. They're trusted to follow the rules as if they're behind concrete walls instead of on a farm that doesn't even have fences. Unlike Goose Creek, which has over 200 security officers, Point McKenzie only has 4. Lieutenant John Gindling helps oversee both institutions.
So they learn responsibility out here. That's one of the big things, too. And a work ethic, because they are just like you and me. They go to work every day. They get up. They go to meetings. They tell us what issues are going on.
Most of what's going on is massive food production. The 3.5 million pounds of vegetables, eggs, beef, and pork are sent to correctional institutions across the state, saving the department more than $500,000 in food costs. Last year, the farm donated 174,000 pounds of produce to the Food Bank of Alaska, too. Most of the meat stays at nearby prisons after it's butchered by Joe Harvey in a meat locker a few buildings away from the Red Pig Barn.
Right here, we're taking the baby back ribs off. This is the loin roast. So what we do is we follow the bone because this is all your baby backs right here. We'll have to trim this off right here because this is the spine.
Just like McElwain, Harvey never pictured himself on a farm or working as a butcher. He says when he was first arrested 24 years ago, he didn't care much about improving his future. He was 18 and had been involved in a burglary that led to a death. It wasn't until he spoke with the parents of murdered children that he started to fully understand how his actions impacted others. He decided to focus on being a better person. Harvey arrived at Point McKenzie in 2013. He says his work in the meat locker and in the fields harvesting vegetables shows him that his contributions matter.
We feed the other prisoners, which they get real food, not processed, not canned. And it also, because we do the donations and everything, it actually helps the community. And they have access to the fresh vegetables that we produce.
Harvey says having the freedom of the farm helps him develop healthier interactions with other inmates, too.
If you do have conflict with somebody, it's a little easier to take that step away and get the breather and then go back and say, hey, you know, I was wrong, or we need to deal with this in a better way.
But Harvey doesn't think programs like the correctional farm are the cure-all for reforming prisoners. And there's only anecdotal evidence to show that it reduces recidivism. DOC doesn't track rates for specific facilities. Harvey says the farm helped him focus, but it won't work for everyone.
People have to be willing to put in the effort for the programs to be effective. Some people are there, some people aren't. Some people get there by going through the program.
Farm staff gives inmates more than a few chances to get on board, but one or two are sent back to Goose Creek every year. After 3 years on the farm, Harvey doesn't plan to be one of them. He's up for parole in the fall and hopes he'll be released so he can start his own small business. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Commercial, sport, subsistence, personal use. Some hear these labels and think conflict. The Salmon Project sees connections. Join 10,000 Alaskans whose lives are connected by Alaska's salmon. Visit salmonlife.org to experience the stories. And find the Salmon Project on Facebook to join the community. Salmon Life, Salmon Love. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Indian dance. Where would you look to find a professional dance group to demonstrate the intricacies of traditional Indian dance? Russia, of course. Or that's what the Asian Alaskan Cultural Center did to bring Mayuri, a group of 20 or so young dancers, to Anchorage. As Alaska Public Media's Ellen Lockyer reports, the troupe will be making their Alaska debut this weekend. No.
It's dress rehearsal time at the Alaska Performing Arts Center. The Atwood Theater is empty, but on stage, dancers dressed in long, shiny purple skirts and colorful blouses twirl for a few minutes, then stop. One dancer speaks to the group, then gestures from the stage to the sound man in his booth. It's the afternoon before their performance, and the music and lighting cues have to be just right. Despite the traditional Hindi music, the woman is speaking Russian, because Mayuri dance group hails from the town of Petrosavodsk, a community closer to Finland than it is to Moscow. This weekend, Mayuri performs in Anchorage. Sanjay Talwar, with the Asian Alaskan Cultural Center, says an India-Russia connection is not uncommon.
We have lots of filmmakers, they go over to Russia to shoot Hindi films, and it's about a little bit over 3 hours flight from New Delhi to Moscow. And our India culture in Russia is pretty big.
Neil Bergava, president of the Cultural Center, says residents of Mother Russia's subarctic climate are eager to embrace spicy, color-drenched Indian culture.
Bollywood films are very famous in Russia.
As if on cue, a singer picks up the microphone. She's singing a song in Hindi. Talwar says he's impressed by the accuracy of how the singers and dancers are interpreting his cultural heritage. Now, with sound and lighting to their liking, the dancers regroup and begin their intricate movements to an unmistakably Indian beat. The Asian Alaskan Cultural Center represents 8 countries. Each year, one country is represented in the center's Culture Night performance. And this year, it's India's turn. And Mayuri represents India well, Talwar says.
And have the movements and have the expression, you have to kind of know the Hindi words, the lyrics. And they are doing a pretty good job.
Backstage, the dancers take a break over pizza lunches. Dancer Anastasia Basante says she's been with Mayuri for about 19 years and that she's learned everything she knows about Indian dance with the troupe and from the leader, Vera Evkrafova.
Because she really has a God gift. I can't explain it any other way. Just she felt it from her childhood that she can dance, that she feels music, that she just can't live without this art and culture.
Mayuri has been teaching and performing dance for 3 decades and has traveled the world. This trip is their first to Alaska, but not to the United States. They have performed in New York City to rave reviews for the colorful show.
We practice a lot and we have, every year we do new items. We sew new costumes. At this moment, we have about 250 dance items, and the very school of Mayuri is really very big now. We have about 400 students and about 60 members in the main group.
Mayuri performs only one public show Friday evening in Anchorage at the Alaska Performing Arts Center. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from John Giraldo of Anchorage. On most days, John is working as a supervisor, but in his free time, he's an extreme alpinist.
I'm John Giraldo, and I do a lot of climbing with as little work as possible in between. I love the adventure and the mental capacity that climbing requires. It's a really neat marriage of physical and mental aspects. You get like all tunnel vision. You're just like, where are you going to put your hand? Where are you going to put your foot? Where are you going to put your gear? And then you get to the belay and you can clip off and then just look around. You're like, whoa, I'm like in a crazy place. This is awesome. Growing up as a subsistence farmer, gardener, we didn't know about climbing shoes or ropes or anything like that. We were super poor, but my dad, he found this really old REI ice axe from Value Village. And with that ice axe, I started going after some bigger objectives. I've done climbing in the Central Alaska Range. It's kind of where I started out. And then I went over to the Eastern Alaska Range a couple seasons ago and did a first ascent of a new route on Mount Hayes, which was a pretty massive undertaking. The Pila d'Or, the Golden Ice Axe is the English translation. They nominate a bunch of ascents worldwide and they have a committee that selects out of those which one will get the Golden Ice Axe of the year. It was a pretty big honor to get nominated. I didn't even know. It's not like you submit. Definitely the most difficult thing I have done so far. That was an adventure that I'll probably never forget. Of course, the actual ice axe went to some crazy mega alpinist, you know, doing some gnarly stuff. But it was pretty cool to just be mentioned in that short list.
John Giraldo lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ellen Lockyer and Casey Ellington. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Rachel Waldholt, Zachariah Hughes, and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., and Ann Hillman in Wasilla. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Through generous APU scholarship packages and the new APU Promise Tuition Grant Program, APU is a sound educational investment in your future. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.